So we're going to speak about practical mechiras chametz, which is very much in Yana Diyoma. So in addition to the standard methods of disposing of chametz, which are discussed in the Gemara, of doing bittel chametz and doing bedikas chametz, our custom and practice is to do mechiras chametz. It's also to sell chametz, even though this doesn't seem to be prescribed quite as explicitly, at least in the Gemara, in the classical sources. So where does this come from, this idea of selling chametz? Well, first of all, it's a kind of a practical consideration, because if you're mevar your chametz, you don't have it anymore. You can't eat your cake and have it too. Or burn your cake and have it too, for sure. When you do your bittul chametz, let's say somebody's mevatel their chametz, and then afterwards they decide that after Pesach they want to take it back because they were mevatel it, they made a ka'afa bi'ara, but what do you know? It's actually not dust or dirt. It actually is still edible. And they figure they'll eat it after Pesach. So the Yerushalmi has the machlokas of Yochanan Reish Lakish as to whether somebody is allowed to reclaim chametz that became batel. We pass like Rabbi Yochanan that you can't, because we're worried that if a person knows that they can reclaim the chametz afterwards, that then they're not going to do their vittel b'leib shalim. So the only way that a person actually would be able to reclaim the chametz is if they got rid of it entirely, if it actually went into another person's possession. So if they sold it to a non-Jew, the non-Jew is not over on Bayiro, Bayimatzi, he's allowed to own the chametz during Pesach. So if the non-Jew owns the chametz during Pesach, so then if it should miraculously come back into the Jew's possession after Pesach, he would be allowed to eat the chametz. This was a big deal, especially for people who were in the liquor industry. Yayin Sarup, their entire living was based upon their being able to sell their merchandise, and if they had to throw out all of their merchandise, even be mevatel all their merchandise and not be able to benefit from it after Pesach, then they would have lost their business. So therefore, the whole institution of Mechiras Chametz, at least on sort of a pragmatic level, was established so that these merchants would be able to still utilize the merchandise, and the only way to do it would be to actually sell it to a non-Jew, and then they would reacquire it from the non-Jew after Pesach, and thereby would be allowed to benefit from the sale of the merchandise after Pesach once it came back into their possession. But are we allowed to concoct such a device, which really smells kind of a little bit suspicious? It smells like a harama, that it doesn't seem like it's a very honest sale, since the whole purpose is to be able to get back the chametz afterwards. So the answer is that maybe we wouldn't have made it up on our own, but since the Tosefta came up with this idea already, therefore we have a firm basis in halacha. The Tosefta is the source number one. Yisrael v'goy shehayu bayim b'svina. Yisrael and a goy were on a boat, v'chametz v'yad Yisrael, and the Jew realizes he has these chametz. It sounds like the case that Tosefta is mentioning is where it's the time for bi'ur chametz is approaching Erev Pesach. He doesn't have the opportunity to burn the chametz. It's afraid he'll burn a hole into the ship and everybody will drown. It's really not worth it. So therefore, harezeh mochol l'nachri, he can sell it to them b'matana, or you can give it to him as a gift. And despite the fact that it is sold to the non-Jew, nonetheless, there can even be the allowance, unlike the case, as we mentioned, the bittul, where one would not be allowed to reclaim the chametz afterwards. The Tosefta says explicitly, you are allowed to reacquire the chametz from the nachri after Pesach is over. Now the last few words are kind of interesting. However, the only condition is that it has to be given as an absolute matana. It has to be given as an absolute transfer. Whether it's to matana, whether it's to mecher, it has to be an absolute transfer to the non-Jew, despite the fact that it does appear that there is this possibility anyway that is being contemplated that the chametz is going to be reacquired afterwards. So this doesn't necessarily give carte blanche permission, because After all, we seem to be talking about an incidental case. So how you buy in Bespina? This has been something that was planned or plotted or is being done on a regular basis. It just so happens this was an emergency situation that they were on a boat. Number two, we do have this qualifying phrase afterwards, Ubilvad sheitnu lo b'matana gemura. Now, the girsa that some have is a little bit different, which is Ubilvad shelo yarim. This is the gears that the Bach has and a number of other people have as well. It seems that this is not necessarily in addition to Levat Sheet and Levat Matana Gemur, but might even be just sort of descriptive, as some say, Hainuhach, that it's just a different way of saying Levat Sheet and Levat Matana Gemur. Make sure that when you do this, this is not being plotted as some sort of a harama. So is it something that we accept, you know, the halacha on a regular basis? The Shulchan Aruch seems to say so. Shulchan Aruch gets rid of the boat. And the Shulchan Aruch just says that, well, if you have chametz that's of olav pesach, we know that it's also bahana. However, this is in Siman Tov Mem Chesed Gimel. V'machlo anasno le'eno Yehudi, shemichutz l'bayis konon pesach. Already it had become something that was normative in the days of the Shulchan Aruch. If you just sell it to the non-Jew, apopi sheyisua machlo le'eno Yehudi v'yodeh b'shaligo v'kol. Even though, and he's more explicit about it, you know that the non-Jew is not going to utilize the chametz at all. Eli yishmerenu lo ad achar Pesach, even make sure that the chametz is still around after Pesach. The yaksav yinenu lo mutter, it's completely permissible. Ubilvad sheyinenu lo matana gemura. And now the lashon of the Tosefta is used, but it's even the qualification is qualified. Belishum tanai doesn't mean so much that you can't engage in the harama. It means that you can't make it a tanai. And this sounds like it's the way it's being codified is that it's more of a technical concern. If you made a tanai and then it turned out that the tanai was not mekuyim, it'll turn out that the seftel, and therefore you'll end up being over on Bayirah Bayimotzi and having Chomashev Alava Pesach. So in order to avoid that possible pitfall, it's just kind of like practical advice. Don't make it tonight, because then it could be that the entire transaction will be nullified. As far as haram is concerned, harama, okay. Oshim karenala mechiva gemura b'davar muat, or you sell it for a davar muat, ava matana manasa haksir la mahani, but again, the same idea, don't make it a matana manasa haksir, because then if the it's not returned, the tanai of amanasa haksir is not fulfilled, then it could be that you'll end up having chumitz over Pesach, and therefore it should be done as a sale, which is an absolute sale. So the question arose that was already raised by a number of authorities as to whether this really should be prohibited based on being an outright harama. The Gemara Shabbos Kaflametet says that you're not really supposed to generally engage in harama. The implication is that harama is certainly in a deraisa for the Nisuri deraisa is not appropriate. So this is something that was discussed by the Tfuah Shur in his commentary, the Bechor Shur, to Gemara Msachim on Daf Chuf Aleph. And he draws a distinction. He says that, you know what? If this would be a harama on a deraisa level, we would not permit this altogether. The only reason why this is permitted is because it's really a harama on a derabanan level. Why is it only a harama on a derabanan level? Isn't the isra v'ayira v'ayimatsi an isra deraisa when we last checked? So he says, yes, you're right. The isra is normally an isra deraisa, but what do we do? In order to avoid a deraisa prohibition, even the Gemara says explicitly that bibitol is enough isagi, that if you are mebatol the chametz, so then you knock it down from the deraisa prohibition. We're still worried that if you come across the chametz, maybe you'll come and eat it, and so forth. So we require a bidika in addition to bittul. But once one has done bittul, they've already eliminated the yisur d'oraisa. So he says, since it's very, very scrupulous to do bittul on our chametz, so that we won't be over on a d'oraisa level in case there's some chametz, we say that kochamir v'chamia, that I know about, that I don't know about, that I've seen, that I haven't seen, that, you know, we're so worried that maybe there's some chametz out there that we haven't covered in all of our Pesach preparations and all of our very extensive chumitz cleaning. Nonetheless, we're mevatel everything that people are going to be very careful to perform bittul properly, and therefore says that the Bechor Shur, for sure, the deraisa prohibition is going to go away. All that we're left with is the derabanan prohibition with respect to any chametz that would be remaining, and therefore the mechiras chametz that is performed on chametz that is going to have at best only an Issa Derabanan related to it, because the Issa Deraisa by Rava Yimatze has gone away, and that is why Mechiras Chometz is permissible. So he says on that basis, if in fact there would be something on a Deraisa level, like getting Hanah from Chometz during Pesach would be taking place, so then that is something where the Harama of Mechiras Chometz would not be applicable, and therefore he decries the practice of people selling their animals to non-Jews and receiving Chometz as their feed during the entire Pesach, and then getting the animals back after Pesach, because then they're getting a direct Hana'ah from the feeding of Chometz to their animals during Pesach, which is an Issa De'oraisa. Since that is an Issa De'oraisa, he says that the Mechiras Chometz will not work with respect to the animals.
Quick question. What comes first, the bittul or the mechira?
Ah, so we're going to get to that. It's an excellent question, because this whole premise of the Bechor Ashur, that what you're selling is chometz, which is mebittul.
Not yours anymore.
In all of the mechiras chometz arrangements that are made by rabbis across the world, I'm not aware of any rabbi who whispers into the ear of the non-Jew as he's signing all the forms and they're performing all of the kinyanim. By the way, all the chometz that we're selling to you is ke'afrika. Kehefke or Kehafra Dara, because if it was Kehefke and Kehafra Dara, what exactly is it that we're selling? So the whole thing sounds a little bit suspect over here. How in the world are you selling something for which you have performed the bittul? So that's an excellent question, and that's a question that in fact is raised. Now the Bechor Ashur raised this issue, this distinction between selling the animals and selling other chometz, because he said, if it's just chometz that you're selling and nobody, you're not getting enough from the chometz during Pesach itself, whatever, it's just going to come back to you after Pesach, that's just the rabbanan, and that's what I allow you to sell. He doesn't distinguish, per se, between selling different types of chometz. This kind of came later on, sort of as a interpolation of the Bechor Ashur, if that's the right word, probably isn't. But the Bechor Ashur, the it sounds like a good word, you know, to throw out there, you know, why not? But the Bechor Ashur seems to allow the selling of any chometz whatsoever. So if you look in the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, so Rav Shechter quotes from Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik always told his Tamidim that he had a tradition in his family, a Brisker tradition, that they were not very machmir, that they would only sell tarubis chometz. They wouldn't sell cakes, cookies, bread, and in fact, when people asked the Rav, apparently, whether he thought that schnapps was tarubis chometz or not, so the Rav said, it's better that you not ask me that question. There is some sort of an opinion that would view schnapps as chometz be'ein as well. So the brisket approach was not to sell any chometz be'ein. Why is that? Because chometz be'ein is an issa by Rav Yimatzei on a d'oraisa level, as opposed to taruvis chometz, which at least according to Rabbeinu Tam Psachim, is only an issa by Rav Yimatzei on a d'rabbanan level. Therefore, they accepted this d'oraisa d'rabbanan distinction, but not based on bittul or no bittul. Because as we'll see, that's kind of like a questionable distinction. So if you say bittul has nothing to do with it, but it's a question of when do we allow harama, when do we not allow harama, so if we draw this deraisa drabbanan distinction within harama, so even if we don't distinguish between animals and chometz, we might distinguish between bayura deraisa and bayura drabbanan, which will be a distinction between chometz be'ein and tarubis chometz. So ariyamazeh, there are some people who are machmir not to sell chometz be'ein, only to sell things which are taruvis chametz. So all the Cheerios have to, you know, be completely disposed of before Pesach, and only the taruvis chametz items are considered to be appropriate for sale in terms of mechiras chametz. Again, it's interesting because the Bechor Ashur, relying upon Bittul himself, does not articulate this particular distinction. Now, is this in fact true? What the Bechor Ashur said with respect to Bittul, as you brought up. So if you look in source number 4, which is the Baal HaTanya, Shulchan Aruch HaRav, so he says, "Misha'ole al gato shemechiras chametz midivrei sofrim." So if you're going to claim the mechiras chametz is really just something which is being done on sort of a derabbanan level, the aminim shekom mevatlin chametz, because everybody does bittul, the omrim chol chamira v'chamira levatav lahavi hefke v'chulei shkaga hu biyado. So he says he thinks that's a complete mistake. He thinks that's an error. Ki chametz hanimkar eino bechlal bitul. That the chametz which your soul is selling obviously is not included within that which you are mevatel. If you are mevatel it, you wouldn't be able to sell it. So obviously this is being from the lashon of bitul. Vehefkam me'achas shadaito lav lakso lezakus bo achav pesach. He goes. He says that he articulates it a little bit differently. We could say that as well. But he says that because you're planning to be zolcha after Pesach. What did we say at the beginning? We said at the beginning that we pass like Rabbi Yochanan that if you do bittul, so there's a gezera, if you will, that you're not allowed to get hanah afterwards because we're worried that if we allow you to get hanah from that which we did bittul, you're not going to do the bittul b'lev shalem. So therefore, if you did bittul, this would fall under that same prohibition and you wouldn't be allowed to be zolcha in it after Pesach. It's all for b'shem and Yerushalmi. So we quoted the Yerushalmi. And therefore, there is no bittul with respect to the chametz that you're selling, since you haven't wanted to use it after Pesach, assuming the goy will be nice enough to sell it back to you. And therefore, the mechira is not done properly. So you're going to end up being open if you don't do the mechira properly. So there's a whole question. I just saw a recent essay. My father of Baruch Simon has a series of svarim called Imrei Baruch. And he just wrote a Sefer Minhagim, so he has a little chapter there on Mechiras Chometz, and he says, you know, is there a minog to do Mechiras Chometz? I have no chometz to sell whatsoever. I have no chometz to sell. I don't want to go along with everybody to say, oh, sign the forms, get the form in by the rabbi. Did you sign the form? Did you give it to the rabbi? I don't want to give the rabbi. The rabbi wants money from me, whatever. I'm going to do Mechiras. I don't want to be involved. I'm going to get rid of all my chometz. I don't own a schnapps business, okay? I'm perfectly fine not selling my chometz. So is the guy Polish me to Tzibur? He's going to say, I'm not going to sell my chometz. I'm not going to do like everybody else. So he calls from Shlomo Zalman Orbach and some others who say, no, this is a minhag Yisrael. Everybody has to join in the party, whether you like it or not, whether you have chometz, whether you think you have chometz to sell or not. We have to be worried that maybe you do have some chometz.
What about the kalim?
Maybe we have Elias Kalim. Why have Elias chometz and kalim? What?
Yeah, that's just a parnasa for the rabbi.
Right, you're taking parnasa away from the rabbi. From the rabbi. That could be one of the titles. You know, that's the rabbi expects to get money from Mechiras Chometz. My goodness. So the fellow says, I don't like the rabbi. So I don't want to support my local rabbi. And he just doesn't want to do Mechiras Chometz. So Shlomo Zalman says that it's appropriate. This is minhag Yisrael. Mechiras Chometz, everybody should do Mechiras Chometz. So Rabbi Simon points out that in fact you can get yourself into a lot of hot water with Mechiras Chometz. Because if you're not relying upon Mechiras Chometz and you're just selling everything so you have in mind, when you do bittul, it's an absolute bittul that you're doing on everything because you're not planning to get anything back after Pesach. So you're doing an absolute bittul, so you don't have to worry about by much on the right level. But if you're going to do Mechiras Chometz, and we assume, like a Shulchan Aruch Harav, that on that which you do Mechiras Chometz, you're not going to do bittul, so then you are segregating a certain amount of chometz that, you know, for which bittul is not going to be chal, assuming that you would be selling, you know, even chometz vein, so that there could be a real deraita violation of Bayra Bayimatse. And if it turns out that the Mechira is not done properly, or I think, you know, there was an incident once a number of years ago, the Rav just, he got very busy, Erev Pesach, he forgot to do Mechira Chometz. So it turns out that there was a Shaila where he was obligated to tell everybody in the Kehillah that he forgot to do Mechira Chometz or not, because, you know, technically, since it's only a Knas de Rabbanan, and they did everything that they could do to sell it, so it was arguable that they were allowed to be Nene after Pesach anyway, and wouldn't be subject to the Knas de Rabbanan, but was he obligated, you know, to tell everybody?
Also, he may not have to give up more than a fifth of his parnasa. He stayed there from this Rabbanan, you know what I mean? He's going to lose his job. Maybe it's this.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, pretty integral part of the rabbi's contract. But the question then is whether it really is a wise idea to follow this chumrah when, if you don't have any chumrahs to sell, you'll be in a much safer position to ensure that you're not going to be over in any deraisa if you don't assume like the Bechor Shur. You assume that bittul is not going to be applicable altogether. So look in source number 5. This is from the Hakdama of Rav Ozner. He elaborates, you know, on the same theme in the Shailos Teshuvos of Shevet Halevi, but there's a sefer that was somebody wrote called Mechiras Chometz Klolis Legoy, and he wrote a Hashkama to the sefer, and he has like a one-page introduction in which he talks about what is the timing, the best timing of the bittul. if we assume kind of like that the mechiras, what's included in the mechiras chametz, can't be included in the bittul, because otherwise you won't be able to be nana from it afterwards. So how exactly does the whole thing work out? So he says, I already wrote in the Shevet Alevi, the dots of a bus and rocket to a shore. Most posting don't agree with the Tefuah Shur. It doesn't mean that they don't agree with the Tefuah Shur necessarily with respect to the Daraisa, the Rabbanan distinction within Harama. Some do, some don't. Some hold that there's no problem of Harama over here, because you're still Mekayim the Mitzvah. What's the Harama? Harama would be to get around to doing some sort of a Mitzvah, for example. But you're doing the Mitzvah Tashbisa. You're going to take 10 crumbs or whatever, and you're going to burn them, and you're going to be Mekayim the Mitzvah. So the Harama simply is that I'm getting rid of the rest of my chametz in some other fashion. There's no requirement that I burn 50 tons of chametz as opposed to 10 crumbs of chametz. If I burn 10 crumbs of chametz, I'm still Mekayim Tashbisu. I'm just avoiding an Averus. He says that maybe Harama is only applicable if I have a mitzvah to perform and I get out of performing a mitzvah by doing Harama. But I perform the mitzvah that I'm supposed to perform and I'm just avoiding an Avera by, you know, doing some sort of a Harama. So he says, so there are those who say that that's not considered to be Harama altogether. It's not a problem of Harama. But if we assume that there is some sort of a problem of Harama, so there might be you might make the right decision, but not in terms of animals and chumets, but in terms of chumets be'en taruvis chumets. So anyway, he says, "Alei l'kvoa," and she says, "Haskamis d'olei ados." Says, I think that the haskam is like that we don't assume like the b'chor shor that the bittul causes everything to be derabban. M'chein alacha ve'yosh be'en bittul konam mechira be'en bittul acham mechira leish kol achad reyusa. He says that the truth of the matter is, you ask the question, Rabbi Eisenbach asked the question: when should you do the bittul? Should you do the bittul before the mechira? Should you do the bittul after the mechira? He says, either way, you're going to have a problem. How are you going to have a problem either way? The bittul kodem mechira, that if you are mevatel before the mechira, this is what I mentioned earlier, hech yimkor mashe hifkir kvar. How can you sell to the goy that which you already made hefkir? You already were mevatel it. So besides the question of how are you going to have binana from it afterwards, how can you even sell it if it's already hefkir? Halov is then matel dopi bebitulo. Then it looks as if your bittul is somehow not a sincere and honest bittul, and perhaps you are now canceling or abrogating your prior bittul by virtue of going through this mechira. It turns out that retroactively we realized, Iglai Milson Mafreya, that it was not a proper bittul to begin with. And that's with respect to the bittul before the mechira. And if you do the bittul achara mechira, or bittul acharei mechira, hek mevatel mashmachok kvar. If you already sold everything, how are you going to be mekayim the mitzvah bittul altogether? There's nothing left for you to be mevatel. You sold. What do our sale forms say? They say that we empower the rabbi to sell all of our chumetz, which is identified in the following five locations, whatever, in our house, in our rooms, in our pantries, under the medicine cabinets, whatever is identified. And then we say, and any other chumetz that I may have, because we're worried that you might miss something. You might have an inheritance. On the morning of Erev Pesach, somebody might die and leave you 500 barrels of whiskey. And you might have this giant chumetz inheritance that comes in Erev Pesach. There's a famous Jew that knows about this. We discussed this once. And you might lose out from it because you didn't include it in the sale. So therefore, we have a catch-all phrase. Like Rabbi Kivega says you could do this. You have a catch-all phrase that even all the other chumetz I'm including in the sale as well. For the catch-all phrase, it's a little bit difficult to assign a value. It might be that, you know, the sale should be a real sale. So you have to assign a value to all of your chumetz. So what do you do with respect to the chumetz that you don't know about? So you're selling to the non-Jew, you say, and I've identified all those chumetz, and there might be other chumetz too, and I'm selling that to you too. How much should I pay for it? How much should I pay for that additional chumetz? Doesn't know how much to pay for it. We could have, you know, appraisers come in and evaluate all the chumetz that we know about, in theory, but we can't appraise that chumetz that we don't actually know about. So the post can say that with respect to the chumetz that's not identified, that should be given by matana. Because you can't really expect them to pay money for it, because, you know, we can't really identify what it is and how much it is, so that should be given by Mat. I haven't seen, by the way, in the standard Mechiras Chometz forms that particular feature included, but that feature presumably should be included as well.
Can you also
unless you say that when we discover about it, any Chometz that we discover will have appraised at a later date, because the Meister, we're not appraising ahead of time anyway. So that's another possible issue. Ubitva Acharei Mechiras says, Mehek Mevatel Mashmach Bar, how can you sell that which you already mevatel? Because also, he says, Minig Adoritz, Chaitzik Imanach Sam Sofadime, says the minig is which way? The minig is Levatel Achar Mechiras. The minig is that we do the Bittul after the Mechiras takes place. Why? Because the this has the advantage, it really does have a certain advantage that captures in an indirect way what the Bechor Shul was getting at, which is that you ensure by virtue of doing that, not that the chametz that you sell is subject to bittul, but by virtue of your doing bittul after the mechira, you ensure that even if the mechira was not valid, it will turn out that you're not over ba'ira ba'yimatzei. Because Mimanam Shach, either the Mechira was valid, in which case you got rid of all your chametz through the Mechira, or if the Mechira wasn't valid, so then you cover the chametz through the bittul that you do afterwards, so you won't be over on Bayra or Bayimatze. Now that still doesn't solve another problem, which is that if the Mechira is valid, so then you haven't performed the mitzvah of Tashvisu, unless there are some poskim say you can perform the mitzvah of Tashvisu through Mechira's chametz, but that's very debatable. Assuming that, you know, you should do Sreifa, you should have chametz that's yours that you're really getting rid of. So then you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of Tashvisu. So how do you solve that? So the best way to resolve that is to have a kind of a shiur in the sale, that you say to the goy that you're selling everything, or the rabbi who serves as the agent of all the people who are selling the chumitz and have appointed the rabbi as their agent to sell the chumitz, says that whatever small crumbs have been set aside by the various sellers for burning purposes, so those crumbs are not included within the sale of a chumitz. And this does not have to be explicitly written in the document of sale, as long as it's conveyed by peh, and the non-Jew accepts it, he is mekabel this limitation upon the sale, so then that would be valid.
Why, even though it says in the shtar, I didn't find it?
Yes, because apparently, at least from a din of the Malchusa perspective, if the shtar does not say that this is absolutely final in every single way, it doesn't have that type of language in it, then the parties are allowed to make a verbal agreement on the side that there will be a certain that is not included within the sale. It's not included within the shtar.
But this thing that Rav Moshe said, that you should do the mechira first and then do the bittul.
Correct.
So that if you want to do that, so then you have to announce the sale is going to happen at 10 o'clock, whenever it is there, and no one should do their bittul until 10:15. But no one said that to people. The people what? Do the bittul whenever they want to. They randomly choose when to do it.
You are correct. So technically speaking, if indeed this is a shita that is going to be adopted as sort of the official stance, that then a rav who accepts this shita, which Rav Bozna says is the accepted minog, should announce that nobody should do the bittul until after the mechira takes place at such and such time.
Right, so you will say my mechira is at
10:00. At least the morning bittul until after what I say, until after the mechira takes place.
But you're not doing the mechira, like Yossi saying, you're not doing the mechira until after I can't eat chametz because I might still want to eat breakfast. So you wouldn't want to do the mechira before eating my breakfast.
Not necessarily. You can also say, just like you could set aside the breadcrumbs, you can also say to the goy, and we're not selling anything which the people have set aside either for breakfast this morning or for the burning of the chametz. You can exclude all of those items from the sale. That's perfectly fine.
People don't do that. Right,
but it's a good idea. It's an ace over.
Typical minhag that the rov sells in the fifth hour, right?
It's a typical minhag, but I will tell you that on behalf of CRC members and synagogues and anybody else who has submitted the form to the CRC this year, we will be doing the mechiras chametz at 8 in the morning on Erev Pesach.
We're quite early, the CRC.
Yes, that's right. We're doing it quite early because we want to make sure that everybody does the bittul afterwards. That's not really the reason, but that would be certainly an independently good reason anyway.
But then your problem, what else about your breakfast?
So then the answer is that we have to explicitly reserve from the sale anything which the people have set aside for breakfast.
Are you going to verbally?
I'm going to say it verbally. I'm going to say it verbally.
And if I walk into my house and I just say, oh, you know what, I'll grab a bagel out of the freezer that we put away from the guy.
That's okay. So the goy is giving permission that you can use that merchandise. Even if you use that merchandise, it's not invalidating the rest of the sale. He's giving permission that you're going to take. He's giving permission. You could take from that amount. Either it's not included in the sale. He's giving permission that you could take it. Either way, it's going to work.
Right.
That's correct.
Doesn't take that much time to have
some. No, but you should speak it out with him. It's appropriate to speak it out with the guy. Whoever is the agent who is making the sale should speak it out with him. Right, that is correct. So that is what I'm planning to do. So anybody who comes up and shows up can see that that I do that kick me in the shins if I forget.
Where is that?
It's going to be 8 in the morning at Congregation Kins. here in Chicago on April 3rd, Friday morning.
Custodian.
What? Not to a custodian. As we'll see, it's very important to sell the chametz to somebody who really understands all the intricacies of the sale. It's very possible the custodian would as well. Right, but we're going to... In Riverdale, there's a family that Rabbi Willig sells to every single year. His name is John Brown. And John Brown is a real estate broker, and he understands all of the intricacies of real estate transactions and of leases and sales. And he's an expert in Agav. You can ask him any shayla about Agav. He can explain it all to you. Kenyan Agav. All right, so the Mishnah Berurah, we're not going to read through it at great length, but the Mishnah Berurah explains that when you do the sale, you have to make sure that the sale is a very serious sale. Since we said that it can't be done in a fashion that would make it clear that the whole thing is just sort of a farce, so you have to make sure that it in fact is not farcical. However, because of the fact that there is a dispute about how one goes about transferring metaltolin, how do you transfer non-real estate? How do you transfer movables? Chometz is movables, it's not real estate. How do you transfer that to a non-Jew? Therefore, we do many, many different kinyanim. We do approximately six different kinyanim. So you do ketzif, kinyan ketzif, which is very debatable, because there's a machlokes as to what is the standard form of kinyan between two Yisraelim when it comes to transferring metaltolin. Machlokes are Yochanan and Shlokesh, whether Mos Konos or whether it's through Mashiach in the Torah. And the Pashup Shad is like Rabbi Yochanan, that we pass like Rabbi Yochanan, the Mos Konos for Jews, in which case Mashiach would be Konos for non-Jews, because it says Okonomiyat Amisecha. These are the ways in which you conduct a transaction with fellow Jews, which means if they're not Jewish, it's the opposite way. Practically speaking, Kinyan Mashiach would work. It would seem to be the best possible way to transfer the chometz, but given that you have hundreds of people who are selling the chometz through the agency of the Rav that they have appointed to sell their chometz, it would be very impractical for the non-Jew to physically take possession through Mashiach of everybody's individual chometz, so therefore we just cannot perform Mashiach. So does Kesef work? So that's a question as to whether Kesef works or not. According to Rashi, it works. According to Rabbeinu Tam, it doesn't work with respect to a transfer to a non-Jew, so we can't rely upon Kesef alone. In addition to Kesef, we have Chatzir, which is that you can rent out the spaces. This is why, in addition to selling the chometz, we also have a transaction in which the non-Jew rents the spaces on which the chometz is located. He can either rent the spaces, or he can buy the spaces on which the chometz is located. So that is what we call kinyan chatzir. Now, does kinyan chatzir work for a non-Jew? So that also is a major question as to whether kinyan chatzir works for a non-Jew, because there is a apipashtus, it does. There's even a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that indicates explicitly that it does. However, there was some achronim who said, well, the Gemara in Gittin says that, or the Bava Metzia says that chatzir mitam shlichi, that when it comes to a kinyan for a non-Jewish boy, it's kinyan to the chatzir is mitam shlichi. I'm sorry, with a Jewish boy, so chatzir is mitam shlichus, and therefore, since chatzir is mitam shlichus and ain't shlichus the goy, so kinyan chatzir is not going to end up working out according to that shita. So the Kesam Sofer had a chumrah that he would sell and rent rent the place where the chometz was located to a non-Jewish woman, as opposed to a non-Jewish man, because with a woman we say chatzir is mitam yad, is revised, as opposed to mitam shlichus. Yes.
By a Jewish name, because it's not gitten, right? Because yad is from mishum get.
That's correct.
So goy, it's not a gitten with kedusha as a whole.
Well, there are those who say that it doesn't. Well, Mavdaki, if we say that, you know, that it's not that it's not shlichus, we don't have the problem being shlichus legoy. So yad, you know, maybe you can get around yad. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe you can get around yad one other way, because we don't find an explicit exclusion anywhere for kinyan yad with respect to a goy. Maybe it wouldn't be applicable to gittin. Okay, but maybe you could have kinyan yad in other respects. It's not gittin. It doesn't have to be dafka in the realm of gittin. The kinyan yad works. So then we have, in addition, so since chatzir may not necessarily work if we say chatzir mitam shlichus, so then there's kinyan agav. Kinyan agav might be the best form of kinyan, because agav is considered to be, the Baalei Tosfos say agav is considered to be a very, very strong strong kinyan. It works both. It works for, you know, metaltolin. It could and it also works even if the metaltolin are not agabi akarka. In other words, let's say that you have chometz, and but you haven't necessarily identified the location where the chometz is located, and you don't have the ability, for whatever reason, to rent or to sell the karka together with the metaltalin. So agav works even if the chometz is not on top of the karka. You could just you could rent one piece of land, and the chometz, wherever it's located, anywhere in the world. The chometz could be in China, it could be anywhere, even if it's on a piece of property that's not owned by you, and you don't have the ability to rent out the land. The kinyan agav just enables nechasim she'ein le machrayos to be nicknamed together with nechasim she'yesh le machrayos, wherever they may be located. So agav is just on a practical level a very good solid kinyan. But some say, since the agav is a kinyan derabanan, who says that when the chachamim were masakin kinyan derabanan, that they masakin it for goyim? So therefore, we can't rely upon agav alone either. Then there is the classical kinyan of kinyan chalifin, which Rabbeinu Tam in Kiddushin Daf Gimel says explicitly works for non-Jews. So kinyan chalifin really could have solved the whole thing, except that there are certain achronim, and I think there was certain rishonim as well, who said that based on the pasuk in Rus that describes chalipin as v'zos lefanim b'Yisrael ala gula v'la tzmura l'kayem kol drash l'akol v'nasan v'yeh v'zos hatzudah b'Yisrael, that the kinyan of chalipin is only applicable to zos hatzudah l'Yisrael, to Jews and not to non-Jews, and therefore chalipin, although we do it and mistama, it really does work for non-Jews, but we're machmir that we don't rely only on chalipin. And then finally, some say you can rely upon situmta. That the Gemara in Bava Metzia says, if there's that minhag hasochem that you can consummate a kinyan through like a shaking of a hands, so therefore you should be able to do that as well. So therefore, let's rely solely on situmta. But some say, well, situmta only works midrabanan, and who says that works in order to mafkia the yisro chametz on a daraisa level? And finally, there's the idea of dina de malchus de dina, of having kinyanim that work based on the notion that you use a kinyan that is effective from a dina de malchus perspective, that the government can be misakin certain kinyanim, and those kinyanim will work for all of the B'nai HaMedina. So, for example, according to halacha, you can't transfer metaltalin through a deed of sale, because a shtar does not work to transfer metaltalin. You need meshicha or something like that. However, when it comes to dina de malchusa, if you have a deed of sale, that can transfer metaltalin. So therefore, we have a shtar. Now, the shtar we have for a couple of reasons. We have the shtar because we also have to transfer the real estate, but in addition to using the shtar for transferring the real estate, we'll also utilize the shtar for transferring the chometz, because from a dina de malchusa dina perspective, the shtar will work for transferring chometz, and there are achronim like the Dvar Avram who say that the dina de malchusa dina, the kinyanim of dina de malchusa dina, work even on a d'oraisa level. And it's not just on a derabanan level, dina de malchus adina works, and therefore, if you assume that's a machlokes, Shmuel says that it's only derabanan, but if you assume that dina de malchus adina works on a deraisa level, so therefore dina de malchus adina might end up actually even being the strongest kinyan. Why do I say it might even be the strongest kinyan? Because there's a flip side to dina de malchus adina, as we're going to see, which is the concern that if something it works as a kinyan, mitzad halacha, but doesn't work as a kinyan, mitzad dina de malchus adina, so then there's also side to say, therefore, it's not considered to be a valid kinyan, because our kinyanim are circumscriber was actually going to work or be authorized from the perspective of dina de malchus adina, and it also affects gemira das. And the people, the goy knows that the kinyan is not going to work beside dina de malchus adina, so he's not going to necessarily have the requisite gemira das, and we're not necessarily going to have the requisite gemira das. So the Mishnah Berurah says, yes.
Why is it the shtar is the dina of why not the money dina of the
But the money, some say that the money also can work mitzad dina de malchus. So one of the issues with the money is that the money is not being paid in full. You're only paying like a certain amount of the money, paying a tiny little bit of the money, which also raises a lot of issues. Okay. Because, right, but that from the standpoint of dina de malchus, even a little bit of money, even if you just give a token amount of the money, that can finalize the entire sale. So therefore, that could even work. That also, even if I said that it wouldn't work mitzad halacha, that could conceivably work mitzad dina de malchus. Nakinami. Now, what do you do with respect to that, the money issue? The money issue, if you say that the sale is only going to be valid with respect to the portion that was acquired by the non-Jew, like all the chometz together could be worth $100,000. But he's only paying at least a minimum amount of a pruta per every single seller. A pruta is what? Right now it's about 2 cents. So a pruta, so if he's selling, you know, he's so if there are 100 sellers, you know, and he gives you $2, or there are 1,000 sellers, and he's giving you, you know, $20 for the 1,000 people who participated in the Mechitzas Chometz, it's still only a very small fraction of the overall price of what the Chometz is actually going to be worth. And that's the way that we structure the sale. He pays a little bit up front, and the rest of it he'll pay later on. So you have to be very careful how you structure the sale. If you structure that he's only acquired the amount that he's purchased, so then the rest of it still belongs to all the Jews, and they're over on only Chometz on Pesach. So it has to be structured that you're selling him everything based on the down payment that he's making. Everything gets sold, and the rest is Zarkon Alav Milvet. The rest of it is going to be a loan that is extended by the seller, all the sellers to the borrower, that really he owns all of the Chometz, but the amount that he hasn't paid is considered to be an outstanding loan. So the outstanding loan, they could go to court and try to correct, and if he defaults on the loan, he's still going to own the chometz. There's no lien on the chometz, so he's still going to own all of the chometz, even if he defaults on the loan, but it has to be structured in that way. So the Baal HaTanya says that doesn't really work. If he hasn't paid for the full amount, so then the kesef, a kinyan kesef or goy, is not going to work in that particular way, and therefore there has to be a complete break in the relationship between the seller and the buyer, so that the seller would not have to continue to go after the buyer to conclude the sale through the payment of the rest of the balance. That you have to have is some third party who takes the responsibility, who's going to have the achrayus, and that third party can be another Jewish person, and that person will be the Arif Kablan. So the Baal HaTanya has this chumrah that there should be an Arif Kablan. So say, what good is that? Then you're imposing the issur on this poor Arif Kablan guy who's going to have all the achrayus for the chometz that he hasn't paid for yet. So the answer is no, because it's not preshuso. He has the achrayus, but it's not preshuso, so he's not oven by your avayim matzei. So therefore, he's not going to be over. So Sholem Eshiv said, I don't like that at all. So of course, so the guy has achrayus, and this kind of like you're getting him into trouble with respect to the chometz. Don't do the Arif Kablan thing.
However, the Kablan is good.
What? So. You need a I don't know that it works with respect to a goy in terms of undertaking this type of a guarantee obligation. So we want to make sure that it's always scouted that it's going to be as strong as possible. So we use a Jew. It's a good question. I don't know why they said you shouldn't use a goy. Presumably it's a good reason not to use a goy. So we use the Yisrael to be the Arav Kaplan, and the Arav Kaplan then has this acquired, but he's not over on the Yisr. Most of the Rabbanim that I know, at least in New York, do not use this Arif Kaplan thing, and don't worry about the whole Arif Kaplan idea. But because whenever you have a community with this sort of like a large influence of Chabad, and this was very, very important to the Baal HaTanya, so they're very, very mockery about this Arif Kaplan business. So here in Chicago, we use the Arif Kaplan. So we have an Arif Kaplan. Sorry?
Arif Kaplan, so Shmita Mechir uses Arif Kaplan.
Did he use an Arif Kaplan also?
I believe so.
I don't know. Yeah, okay. So anyway, the Maaseh, the Aruch HaShulchan writes, and when he has this Seder Mechiras Chometz, that there's absolutely no reason whatsoever to use an Arav Kaplan. If you have a payment in part of it or for all of the Chometz, and the rest you do Zekifas Milveh with respect to the rest of the amount, then it's a completely binding transaction. There's no reason to bring an Arav Kaplan into the mix. But he says Minhag Yisrael is to use the Arav Kaplan. So the Aruch HaShulchan actually says in his Seder Mechiras Chometz that the Minhag is to use the Arav Kaplan. So the mics that we use the Arav Kaplan. However, I can tell you that Rabbi Willig, when he does the Mechiras Chometz in Riverdale in New York, he does not use the Arav Kaplan. And when I asked him about this strange practice in Chicago that they're using the Arav Kaplan, so he said, "You just came into town, don't make waves." So the mics that we're still utilizing this Arav Kaplan idea. But so those are all of the kinyan. And what I wanted to speak about was kind of some of the issues that relate to a couple of these kinyanim lemaisa. With respect to the idea of purchasing it back from the non-Jew. So a lot of people ask me this question. And this is just, I don't know that the post can talk about this, but you have to be very careful how you answer these questions. They say, what time are you going to be buying back the chometz after Pesach? I want to know what time, because I have to know when I'm going to be allowed to use the chometz. So, what the Mishnah Berurah does say, if you look in source number 16, the Mishnah Berurah says, Achonim kastru, terashai afilu laftiach yaksov yiknem menem yitin lo revach. That you're allowed even to promise the non-Jew, that you're going to repurchase the chometz from him, and that you're going to give him a certain amount of the profit. If you look in the actual lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, the actual lashon of the Shulchan Aruch is that you're allowed to say to him, Shema estark v'chenu mimcha achar Pesach. Will make the sale price a little bit higher. Because I'll have to buy it back for you if we decide that I'm going to buy it back for the same price that I sold it to you, and let's make it a little bit higher because that'll make it more appealing for you to sell it back to me after Pesach, because you'll get more than market value for it. But it's not a guarantee that it's going to be purchased back. It's a shema et starach. Maybe I'll need to purchase it back from you. So many of the poskim say it shouldn't be really more than a shema, because once you're making it as an absolute, then already it sounds a little bit like you're conditioning the sale upon the buyback. If you're conditioning the sale upon the buyback, that already runs afoul. That already raises the question that the whole kinyan might be cast into doubt, and it also raises the harama meter very significantly when there's an absolute agreement. So what's much better to say is we're going to have a meeting after Pesach, and at that time we'll either settle our accounts in terms of paying the unpaid portion of the balance, or we can discuss other possibilities of what we might want to do. And in past years you've always sold it back to me, so that's something that maybe we will discuss again if applicable. But that's all. It shouldn't be more than that. So when people ask me the question, when is the chometz going to be brought back? I said, well, I'm going to meet with the non-Jew shortly after Pesach is over, a few minutes, you know, after Chase. And at that time, we'll have a discussion. And in the event that it turns out that he decides to sell the chometz back to us and we decide to repurchase it from him, it will take place at such and such time. But that's really the way in which the question should be answered.
What's wrong telling the son, the Yidl, that's asking when you're buying it back? What's wrong telling him, yes, we're going to buy it back into the son? He's not part of it.
Because you can't, if you walk around with the absolute knowledge that you're buying it back, so then already that implies that there's, that the fix is in.
That's why. That's only between you and the guy. That's all. Between you and another Jew.
I have to answer.
If he doesn't want to sell it back to you, what if you told the Yidl?
It's meaningless.
Yes, and it's very, very important that they understand. People understand that this is not, the fix is not in from the very beginning of the transaction.
The rub is already had, right?
As far as the harama part of it, it's only between the buyer and seller. If I don't tell the guy that I'm going to buy from you, then
but if I'm representing all the sellers, I want the sellers to understand what the deal is, okay? So that they will have the right to the appropriate mindset. Now, look, I just want to, you know, get through this. If you look at the source number 17, wait a second, hold on. Where am I going here? Why did we do 16? Okay, oh, I know. Okay, because I happen to be there. Okay, so if you go now to source number 8, okay, source number 7, excuse me. So source number 7, okay, wait a second. Yeah, source number 7. So the Igros Moshe says something very interesting. So one of the questions is, do you do mechira on the mechira on the makomos? Okay, do you rent the spaces or do you sell the spaces? So the answer is we rent the spaces. Now, one of the main reasons why we rent the spaces, just so it should be very clear, and this is something that Mishnah Berurah mentions at the end of source number 6 over here, is that you can't sell something that isn't yours. And for a lot of people, they don't own their houses, they don't own their apartments, they rent their houses, they rent their apartments, they rent their spaces. So they can't sell something, they can sublease it, okay, but they certainly can't sell it. So if you're going to have a sale of all the places, it's just not going to work for everybody. So therefore you do schiras and makomos, number one, because that's something that everybody will have the ability to do. Even though technically speaking, if somebody is leasing a place, they really should get the consent. In many cases, it requires the consent of the landlord before they can, you know, sublease it. But Lamite said, no landlord really cares about a sublease where you're not really having the other person move completely into the property, where they just have kind of like an easement. From a secular perspective, it would be sort of like an easement that they have a right of egress in order to get to these materials that are being, you know, given to them through a lease of the land that happens to be right next to those materials, you know, the chometz in this particular case. So the general consensus is that doesn't really require consent, even when consent is otherwise required for subleasing purposes. So one reason to do schiras hamakomos is because that's something that could conceivably work for everybody, as opposed to mechiras hamakomos. Number two reason, if you look at the end of source number 7, the Igros Moshe, that you need the schiras hamakom for the duration of Pesach. Meshaleka bezek kepeda the dina amedina ech lahaskia, because from a dina the machlus the dina perspective, they don't really care how you go about renting property. Avalom mechivas hamakom. So when it comes to mechivas karka, the selling of karka, so they're selling a property. There were all kinds of rules and rituals and recording requirements and so forth and so forth. So therefore, that might be either much more of a harama hanikeres, or might be something that doesn't really work if you don't do it according to all the specifications, which you're not. You're not going to have anybody go to the land registry and register the purchase of the land on which the chometz is contained by the non-Jew. Shetoli zedakum dinei medina. So Moshe gives the second reason why it makes more sense to do schiras hamakom as opposed to mechiras hamakom, because it will work much more smoothly from the perspective of dinei d'machusa. And we're worried if any of the kinyanim don't work from dinei d'machusa, the whole thing might be down the drain. Now bear in mind that you need kind of two different transactions here, since you're renting the land and you're selling the chumetz. So you're going to do many of the transactions two times. You're going to do the Kinyan Keset, and you're going to do the Kinyan Sudar, and you're going to do the Kinyan Situmta, you know, the shaking of the hands. You're going to do that both with respect to the Chometz, and then you're going to do it a second time, okay? You'll get a Shavar Putza for everybody, and you're going to have a second handshake, and you're going to have a second a Kinyan Sudar, which the Goy gives over his handkerchief or whatever, in order to transfer the land on which the Chometz is located, okay?
Why? Why do you do it twice?
Because these are two separate transactions.
Just like you're doing two people's chometz, but you're doing kinyan chometz.
Because this is with respect to two different things. Okay, one is I'm selling the chometz. Okay, I'm selling a lot of different chometz and so forth. And the other is that I am transferring land. The truth of the matter is, technically speaking, you could include it all within. Okay, although you can't, you would have to give two putos. Okay, with respect to the kesef, because one puta is for the chometz itself, and one puta is for the seudas of the land. Okay, those are two separate things that are being conveyed, so therefore they do require separate payments. But in order to kind of keep track of the fact that you're doing these two different kinyanim, it's just smart to have two separate rituals, which is the way in which that's the way Rabbi Willard does it, for example, with the two separate rituals.
You do the land first.
Because then you'll do the kinyan chaser afterwards. In other words, you'll take care of the chometz to the kesef through the first three kinyanim, okay, which is kesef, Situmta, and Sudar, and then after the land has been transferred, you'll throw in the Kinyan Agav and the Kinyan Chatzar as well. Okay, so you can this way you're kind of keeping track of the different ways in which the chometz is being properly transferred. Okay, so once you have the chatzar rented, at that point in time you enunciate the Kinyan Chatzar and you enunciate the Kinyan Agav. Now, if you look at it, some say that you should bedatka do a mechira, because if you do it through schirus, so then it has a schirus lokanya, and the property has not completely transferred into the goy's possession because he does not have a full-fledged kinyan through schirus alone, and then the Jewish party still has a chayus, because it's still in his possession. The chometz is still standing in his is still sitting in his possession, and some point out that if the chometz would say get burned up, or there will be a fire and the chometz would disappear, then the non-Jewish party will never pay for the rest. Even if you ask him for the rest of the money, he's not going to pay. Therefore, there's like a certain amount of achrayus that you now have to watch the chometz to make sure that he's going to pay properly for the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And therefore, maybe you should bedavka do it through mechira and not do it through schiras. So Rosh Shlomo Kluger and others deal with the shayla. You look in source number 8, and he says, you can argue on the one hand that mechira is better because of this particular reason. The downside to mechira would be that there's a much more clear harama, because if somebody maybe is renting property, so then we understand that they're not necessarily occupying it, but you're selling the property to them and they're not occupying the property, taking over the property, it looks much more like a harama. But nonetheless, he says that it's either you hold against the Tefuah Shur and you hold that the Haram is good even for a Deraisa, or if you hold like the Tefuah Shur, so he holds that the whole thing is only Midrabanan, so therefore you don't have to worry about it. And he says Skivus also is okay, because you're worried that Skivus Lokanya, he says, you don't have to worry about that. And he gives a whole bunch of reasons. He says, number one, how can you say that it's Bechrayis Yisrael? The Yisrael is not Mekabel Achrayis. You're going to say the whole thing, all the chametz will get burned, will get destroyed in a fire, and the Goy is not going to pay the rest that he owes you. If he doesn't pay the rest that he owes you, he's a ganav. That's not your problem, that you have Achrayis. It's his problem. He's a ganav. He owes the money. But it's not that you have a real responsibility to watch the rest of it. And then he says, yes?
There is a din, but that's there is something like that with Goy Olim. If you have a guy who's going to force you to take Achrayis, then you consider to be Chayav Achrayis. Even though technically you're not Chayav Achrayis, legally you're not Chayav Achrayis, but he doesn't, you know.
See, he rejects that. He says, he names it Vaday, the day of the Chuya Loma Dimanafi Olam Nesher Achrayis, Lokayim Lankain. The Shlomo Kluger said, so we don't hold that way. It is what the day is born in Shulchan Aruch. But he disagrees with it. Similarly, the Divrei Malkiel also talks about this particular issue, and he says that even if I would be worried about it, says if you're yichid bias for the chumis of a goy, even that you do have a chayis for, so if you're yichid bias, so then you're not over on the yisur. So he says that since if you're yichay bias, mali yichay bias, mali yichay the makom bias, if I'm yimiyaket a little makom in the bias for the goy, so he says that's good enough as well. And thirdly, Shlomo Kluger throws in the third thing. He says even if I say that you have a chayis and skiris lo kanya, etc., the Torah says you only over and lo yimatze if it's yours, if it's matze biyado. This is eno matze biyado, because the maisa even if he hasn't received a full ownership over it. Lemaisa, just like a gaiflin, hasn't received full ownership when he takes something out of your possession, because it still technically belongs to you, but it's not considered to be matzli biyotcha. So too over here, as long as you perform the maisa skiris, it's not considered to be matzli biyotcha. Now, just the last point with respect to Rav Moshe's that it should work mitam din in the machlus tadin. It's a very fascinating tshuva by the tshuvas von Hagos of Sternbach. So Sternbach raises the question here. He says, Hashela b'darim Africa. This is source number 12. Okay, there was a question that was raised with a number of the already by the Chassam Sofer and others. How could we really take this mechira seriously when it doesn't have a shtempel, it doesn't have, you know, sort of the prerequisites of the malchus? So the Chassam Sofer said that it could be that when does dina d'malchus didn't really apply? When the malchus is very makpid on something, that the makpid that you do things a certain way. If they know that the only reason why the chumetz is being transferred is in order to avoid an iser, a ritual prohibition, so he gufa makes it better from a dina d'malchus perspective, because they're not makpid on how you're going to transfer property when you're doing it for purposes of overcoming ritual prohibitions. They're okay with it, meaning that it's not that they don't accept the validity of the sale. They would say if it was being done for purposes of being a permanent sale or something like that, so then we would really be machmir on it satisfying all of our prerequisites. But since we know that you're doing it only for purposes of overcoming the ritual prohibition, so therefore we don't care, meaning we consider it to be a valid sale. We'll treat it like a valid sale because for these purposes we don't require the stempel, the stamp, the apostille, whatever we would have required under normal circumstances. So that's one approach.
You could say physical. You could say that the governor says this, and the whole thing is a joke anyway.
That's the other approach. He says, but many, many take the approach that it's good enough this way. And the Divrei Chaim, which is source number 13, he's also quoted in the context of the Shemitah sale, because this was a concern that was raised with the sale of the land in Eretz Yisrael, that if they weren't registering it in the tabu, in the land records, it wasn't really a sale. So many quote this same Divrei Chaim, which is source number 13, where he says that it doesn't really matter if it doesn't work according to Dina de Machlus. Dina de Machlus can only help you, it can't hurt you. If they have a type of transaction that works for them that doesn't work for us, we can include that as well. But if we have a transaction that works according to Torah law, and we're dealing with Torah prohibition, so of course it's going to work whether they recognize the sale or not. Because we don't care about Dina de Machlus. If we have a kinyan that works from a Torah perspective, that's always going to work. But there's the middle approach. The middle approach is that we do care, but as long as they're not makbid on the way that we go transferring chametz, even if it doesn't comply with all of their prerequisites, that's going to be good. So just an incredible incredible case, sort of dealing with a situation that is no longer historically an issue, but kind of like from a political perspective, it's sort of an interesting one just to note, and that is in South Africa, that there was a point in time in which the areas which were occupied by people of white colored skin were not allowed to be rented to people of dark colored skin. So he has the shuva about where you have the Lebanim and the Shkorim. He's not allowed to. And yet they would use somebody of dark colored skin to sell their chametz to, which wouldn't be recognized according to the Medina. So he says that even though they wouldn't. What?
I don't get the problem. They couldn't rent it.
He's assuming that even this amount of rental would have been prohibited according to the law. I don't know. I don't have the statute in front of me. However, he says here that Baruch Hashem thinks has changed.
Yeah.
He says, even though al pi hachok that this all of this is required, the kahai gavna machimim below kapti. If they know, he says, even though dinan machlus ha'hainim adin shem machlus makpedis olav, but kanir shatzak dat, since they know you're doing it for ritual purposes, kin shiyodim shulakam yam milvad v'tzarek harama, they know that it's being done for harama purposes. So a kingdom for harama purposes, even they would recognize, even if it violated some of their laws. So the original barrier breakers of apartheid in South Africa were actually the from Jews who were doing mechiras chametz. This is how it all started. This is how apartheid collapsed in South Africa. Moshe Sternbach, now the head of the Eidah Haredis in Eretz Yisrael, he was the one who was the trailblazer on this subject. Rather than having, you know, if you want to have a sort of like a ticker tape parade to celebrate the person who destroyed apartheid, it really should be from Moshe Sternbach. So now we have the last thing that I'll just mention, and we'll start with this, is the Igros Moshe, source number 17, where Rav Moshe Feinstein says, what if you sell the chametz, and it turns out that the store that sold the chametz, they came to the brother, they sell our chametz, but then they're selling the chametz, they own a supermarket, and they're selling all the goods throughout Pesach, so is that a good sale or not? So many say that's not a good sale, because he made it clear retroactively that there wasn't appropriate gemurah status. The Igros Moshe says, nothing doing. This was gazela, that they sold it properly, if they can avoid the iser of mechiras of only chametz on Pesach, so they want to avoid the iser with respect to whatever they sold, so that they were gozel from the goya, and that they weren't able to overcome because they figured they could make a profit. But on whatever chametz they weren't able to make a profit, so that they took the goya, there's no reason to assume that they were mabata to sell with respect to anything else. So therefore, at least for Moshe's mechadesh, that if a supermarket did do a mechiras chametz and they had any left over, even though they were selling the chametz and stealing from the non-Jew during Pesach, there wouldn't be a problem with chametz shevel over Pesach afterwards. I will say that the best type of mechiras chametz, and I'll end with this, as I've been discussing with Rabbi Oppenheimer, because we have a customer for whom this is applicable, is if they really show that it's not a haroma at all, because they sell their whole company, and the non-Jew buys the company, will be making the profits over any of the proceeds during the course of Pesach. So we're in the process of doing that right now. That's something which is endorsed explicitly by the Yoruch HaShulchan, Simen Tov Memechef, Sif Chaf, and that's Mechilas Chametz that should be kosher the Chol HaDeos. And we'll stop here.